worse. I heard you can get crack on the river. Oh, no. I'm going, geez, what brought that up? And then I look, and here's these three thugs standing right at the entrance of the, of this, they call it the levee.
Is it the L Street Bridge or the Water Street?
No, the Broadway Street Bridge.
Broadway Street Bridge.
Which is near the Asti and the Fifth Avenue.
About a month ago? Or?
No, this was 5 months ago. I believe the end of October. So, he sees these people and it sets him off. I couldn't believe it. Here we were talking about the great future that they had as residents here in Santa Cruz, the, you know, unique town and everything. And all of a sudden he sees these thugs and he goes off on a tangent about, you could get crack here. And then I heard, and I said, partner, there is no crack on that river at all. Now, I'm a bilingual American and all, and I know just about everybody down there because I'm an employee at the soup kitchen, and I have to deal with their problems, their medical problems. We feed them, clothe them, shower them, and shelter them. And so they come to me as an interpreter all the time because of abscesses and all the problems that the junkies have and everything, and the dealers, just disputes over everything, you know. I've always been looked up to settle disputes because I take no favoritism. I just, you know, you can't bribe me. I'm a lot like a police officer. You're not going to bribe me. And everything, and this guy wouldn't get off the subject, and we sat there and argued up on the bridge for a good 20 minutes. And I'm going, Greg, listen to what you're saying. You've got, you know, him and his friend Steve, you know, great kids. I mean, here's kids that have never been in trouble before in their life, and I could feel it. You know, no history of any kind of drug activity, and here's this guy, and geez, I started thinking, you know, while we're arguing up there, what the hell are you going to do with this crack? Frame it and put it up on your wall? And he goes, yeah, I want my friends to see it. And I'm going, boy, what a kook, you know? And I'm going, geez, this guy's really on a blackout. And I know all about blackouts. And then...
intoxicated himself? Or?
Well, he was already, you know, going...
swaying and staggering.
Swaying, and his volume of voice and everything. And then he started slurring. And then, of course, I knew immediately that the guy was in a blackout.
So what happened?
Well, I'm trying to think of every way I can talk him to keep walking across the bridge without going back and then going down to where these three thugs, all of them 200 plus pounds, one must weigh close to 250. But they weren't police officers. I mean, they've got goatees and big baggy clothes, everything. So I finally convinced them to leave the bridge, and like an idiot, through my own fault, I go... When I saw that we were leaving and we were headed back towards the direction of our plans, I say to him, oh, great. I said, the last thing you want to do is go down there in the Mexican's office. We refer to him as his offices, oficinas. And that just triggered this guy. I don't know what it was I said. He says, I'm not going to have a bunch of illegal aliens telling me I can't walk down my own blacktop, you know, and all this.
Let me interrupt you for just a moment here, because I want to advise you that because you are going to court, what's it, Monday? I don't know if you want to give all the details that might be used inappropriately to possibly incriminate you. So be careful what you say. I would love to hear the whole story, and so would all of us, but I want you to not compromise your own case.
Okay. So I have Greg standing there. Now he's in a tangent. Now it's no longer about drugs. It's about his right to walk the river. And he told me basically that, you know, if I didn't want to go, you know, that I was some sort of chicken guy and all this and everything. And then I said, don't go down there. I've been related with just about every person that's died down there. Yeah, I was the pallbearer for Sun Man. I was Mr. Manuel Lopez's, one of his friends, very close friends. I knew the youngster that Juan Trejo that had been shot down there for asking for a cigarette. All kinds of violence down there, and it was all within visible range of the areas of all these deaths. You know, so I was very worried about the gentleman that was with me going down to the river with over $1,000 in his pocket because it was payday. That was out of the question. My Vietnam days and everything, if I had to do it all over again, I would still go down to the river with him. I just couldn't see him going down there. He didn't speak a word of Spanish or anything. I spoke Spanish, and I knew there wasn't crack on that river. If you were to get crack on the river, that meant that the Mexican had agreed to with you to go down in the bushes and go through the 30 minute of cooking $20 worth of coke, which is only $2 worth of cocaine in street. It's 500 an ounce. You figure a $20 bag's only $2 to that wheeler dealer down there. So he's not going to go out of his way to cook you 30 minutes up for a little piece of rock. Is the whole point. They don't have time for it. Unless you want to pay for a piece that they might get a little action in on, and then they might go down there and do it for you. But other than that, no, it isn't worth it to them, a $2 piece of it.
Back with
them
down under the bridge.
It was, to me, it was like running the gauntlet. I figured if I could just get Greg to the next bridge, or maybe down to the taxi stand down at Metro, I could relieve myself of that problem right there. I didn't want anything to do with it. I begged him to go back to the bar, to forget about the night going to the other place and everything. And he was in a blackout. There was nothing.
You tell a great story, but I encourage you to get to the legal aspects of this, since we do have a legal eagle here, well, and a man who's been working a lot with the law. And, I mean, your story is vivid and sharp, but if you can, press forward to what, you know, the actual contact with the police.
My approach was that I wasn't going to speak to anybody if somebody spoke Spanish. And the first words out of the police officer's mouth to me was Negra Blanca, which means, you know, he's wheeling, dealing Negra Blanca.
Negra Blanca is?
Now remember, this is a term that the dealers use strictly for white Anglo patrons. It's just a code word. The Mexicans don't use this language amongst themselves.
For?
Negra's heroin and Blanca's coke. So he says Negra Blanca, and I go, no. And this is all in Spanish now. I go, no. We're just passing through, and as you can tell, my friend here is drunk out of his ass. And he's just talking craziness. And so he kind of shrugs, and I thought he was going to walk off. I really did. It looked like he was, when all of a sudden my friend looks at him and he goes, crack, crack, and oh. I'm thinking they're dealers. He just whips right back to me and says, Croxy, Croxy. Like if I had lied to him or something, you know. And he was determined to make, you know, I said, geez, this guy is determined. You know, once you enter their office, they want the sale. And I'm going, do you even know what crack is? Because the way the system goes down in the river, all these young kids from Mexico, and it's a revolving door. They come, they're at the San Lorenzo Lumber. Some guy, if they don't get out to work that day and they're staying with their uncles, cousins, or whatever down in the flats or whatever, and they didn't get out to work or something, they will turn to moonlighting drugs because it's such a good income. So them guys never even know who their bosses are, really, these wheeler dealers. And a lot of them are so young, they don't even know what crack is in Mexico. I'm pretty sure that there's a lot of people in Mexico that have crack, but not here. So I asked him, because he was demanding that he had crack, and I said, do you even know what crack is, sir? And not sir, but, you know, I'm asking him in Spanish and everything. And I'm realizing that the guy is not answering a lot of my questions. And then he leaves me. He talks to this guy. And he asks the guy to wait a minute. And he runs back to his partner to supposedly, I guess, get this stuff. And that's when I grabbed my friend. I said, I heard him talk English to you. I said, we better get the hell out of here. These guys are Norteños. Let's go. You know, the Spanish-speaking, I mean, Americans that are Hispanics that are like, you know, Norteños. It's like a prison gang of some kind or something.
And agents for police? Or?
No. Norteños are like heavy-duty prison. There's Norteños and Sureños, but they're Americans. It has nothing to do with Mexico. And because they were speaking English to Greg at the end before he ran off to go get this drug, I told him we're in bigger trouble than we thought. These aren't Mexicans. These are Norteños. Let's get the hell out of here. Now, they're going to burn you. They're going to give you a piece of soap, anything. If you ordered an elephant down there, if you got the time to wait, they'll go get it for you. So, no, too late. And I'm mad at Greg at this point because, you know, he's telling me that he earns his money, and so what if they burned him for a measly 20, you know, it's his own business, it's his money, and it's true, so I just stand, and I'm totally upset now. Well, the officer comes back, and guess what happens? Greg now is so drunk that he's refusing to give him the 20. I couldn't believe it. I said, oh, good, and then he comes back to me, and he...
You said the officer came back, or the...
The officer comes back.
Did you know this was a police officer at this point?
He stole the Mexican dealer to me.
He turned out to be a police officer.
Oh, in the end. Yeah. But he comes back, the dealer comes back to Greg, and then Greg did one of those drunk numbers that don't want to give up his money. And I couldn't believe it. And then he comes back to me, and I've already I'm like totally bummed out by now because I'm already standing away from Greg, and the only reason I'm standing there is for his own safety. The dealer comes back to me and says, dinero, and then I just started to laugh, and I said, dude, I've already told you a million times, I'm saying this in Spanish again, that's slang, you know. The guy's drunk out of his mind, he's not going to give you anything. And then I look at Greg, come on, and then he ran back towards Greg, snatches the 20 out of his hand, and identifies him, you know, he was really kind and everything. He says, hey, Santa Cruz police officers, you're under arrest and everything. Turns him around and handcuffs him. And then it's like coming on to me, holy smokes, a guy's a cop? I go there, I said, hey, well, if you're an officer, and I told you 3 times the guy is so drunk that he's talking out of his ass, why didn't you tell him to go home, or why didn't he, act responsible and say, hey, I'm a police officer, you're going home or you're going to jail, one of the two, you know. Mm-hmm. He had a responsibility to Greg and me because I'm the designated walker, not the driver, but the walker, involuntary one at that. And all of a sudden, here it goes, Greg. Which he's already pleaded guilty. Now what Greg doesn't know is he's a 29-year-old drug purchaser for the rest of his life. He's been branded and he doesn't even know it. He doesn't even know the repercussions to this little charge. But because they told him down at the courthouse that I was going to, like, be on their side or something, I was going to go to court and testify against them and everything, And then they threw out a warrant on me right in front of them and everything, and I wasn't even scheduled to go to... They scared him to the point where they just... he just said guilty to the charge. Now he's got a guilty charge of that, but he just doesn't understand in the future when you go put an application in or everything, all applications now ask minor or major offense, drug, any drugs.
What did they charge you with?
Soliciting with the intent to purchase drugs. Now, I didn't buy nothing from this guy or nothing. I'm just taking care of my friend.
Did they charge you the same night that they arrested your friend?
I believe the police officer claims that I, since I knew how to speak Spanish, went and arranged a deal for him out of a $2 piece of cocaine. What was my payment? 17 cents worth of crack? Jeez, I mean, I can't believe it. I mean, what was my, you know, if I was some kind of dealer, what the hell am I getting out of this?
Now, tomorrow is your court date?
Yes, tomorrow afternoon.
What proceedings? Is that a jury trial?
I had to go jury.
Of course.
I refuse to go. I mean, I've done it for 18 years as a town drunk. I mean, I you always get a plea bargain. Would you go down from maybe town drunk to a public nuisance? Or yes, guilty as hell. But But that's all drunk stuff, and all my offenses have always been the minor, open container stuff. This is completely...
You have an attorney, right?
Oh, well, see, they appointed me public defenders. And I'm just, because I get this feeling that the public defender, that you're being judged, prosecuted, and defended all by the same office. It almost feels that way, and I was in that paranoia. That every time that I went to see my public defender, somehow or another, when we arrived at a preliminary trial, everything that I had told him, all of a sudden the district attorney seemed to know to detail what my defense was going to be, and then I started getting paranoid.
We're talking on Free Radio Santa Cruz to B.E. Smith and to...
Jorge Castro.
And Jorge Castro. We're discussing a real-life situation where a man is, in essence, according to his account, being entrapped by Santa Cruz police authorities and faces legal ramifications tomorrow. You are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We're going to pause briefly to give our guests a chance to take a few deep breaths and you a chance to hear a little music, and then we'll be back with these two men for a more extensive discussion of what can a person do in this kind of situation.
I was walking down the street, minding my own affair. Two policemen grabbed me unaware. Says, "Your name Henry?" And I says, "Why, show." Says, "You're the boy I've been looking for." Let those bright lights shine. Those ten poor souls like me in that line. I knew I was the victim of someone's evil plan. When the stool pigeon walked in and said, "There's your man," I was praying. Says, "Where were you on the night of July 19th, 1953? Oh man, I was home just a twiddly deep.
Framed, La Bamba soundtrack. You are, of course, tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And our guests are going to rejoin us shortly after finishing their cigarettes, but no, take your time, guys. A couple of announcements before they do. There is a city council meeting coming up on Tuesday in Santa Cruz. That's every second and fourth Tuesday. City Council in Santa Cruz meets at 3:30 and at 7. Both sessions often have interesting items on them and items that we need to be aware of because it's your money that they are spending and it's laws that affect you that they are passing. But this Tuesday coming up, what have we got? Well, we have later in the program we'll have a brief summary from David Silva, who's our kind of council watcher. Silva has not had really had the time to go through the agenda in detail. I just saw the agenda this morning. He did make a couple of comments, and I'm going to make a couple of comments on what's coming up. The afternoon session, what they usually do is they have a report on legal matters from the city, lawsuits the city's been involved in. And there are two lawsuits coming up, one that actually affects David Silva very directly. David Silva is a Green Party candidate. He's on the committee to repeal the sleeping ban. He's been fighting for labor rights here in Santa Cruz for half a decade. He's a former welfare worker. And he's also the victim of an assault by Santa Cruz Police Department in September of 1996 at City Council when he was thrown out the door bodily by Sergeant Andy Crane under the direction of then-Mayor Mike Rotkin. And he is suing the city for boku bucks. And that case is actually coming to the city attorney at 3:30. Well, it's coming actually earlier, but we'll arrive at the City Council. There'll be a report on Silva versus City of Santa Cruz, now in U.S. District Court, as well as a case of Pusilik versus Santa Cruz. That's the case of Frank Pusilik, who was hired by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless and actually was actually quite an advocate for the homeless. He wanted to set up a safe zone. He wanted to set up a safe haven. He wanted to use the property that the Citizens Committee insisted on keeping vacant so homeless people could actually establish a campground area during the period of time when that property was vacant, nearly a year and a half. Now it's got the $2 million community house project on it, kind of the Cadillac project for a relative handful of homeless people instead of the campground that used to be there. Anyway, Pusilik was dumped by CCH, slandered by the Sentinel, and now is suing them and the city for damages. That's another interesting case. It's going to be coming up. Again, we're not going to learn a lot, but if you're interested in these cases, you can see the progress of them step by step. I'm going to be talking more about the City Council after I play a segment from David Silva. That's going to be later in the show. We actually have another guest coming, as well as B.E. Smith and Jorge Thomas here. That's a man we've actually heard before, but never in person in the studio. That's going to be Rick Peterson. Rick was a witness to events happening immediately after the shooting of Brian Andrus, a man shot on Button Street a week ago today, actually. And his son, R.J., was actually a witness to the shooting. And we have his account that's going to be broadcast. If not today, then possibly we're preparing a loop tape so that entire matter can be replayed at different times. And those of you who aren't able to catch the show when we do play it will be able to catch it at a later time. That's going to be happening later, probably around 12:30, 12:45. We'll have Rick Peterson in the studio. We also have some segments from Watsonville, where John Crew of the American Civil Liberties Union, those of you listening at our last show on Thursday may remember, Crew talks about the use of gang identification processes by the police to essentially set up a data process, a data system, an information system, whereby if you get on that list, you stay on that list, and it affects your whole life. You've heard Jorge talking about how he advised his friend that if he got a drug conviction, he was up shit creek without a paddle in terms of the kind of problems he's going to face later in life on job applications and so forth. Well, you don't even have to get convicted. You don't even have to get arrested. You can just be detained by the police, photographed and searched, and zip, you go into a database. That's what the Santa Cruz police were doing downtown last year to young people, up and down the mall, taking their pictures for no reason, jaywalking or less, searching them without consent. This is a process that doesn't just happen in Watsonville. It happens here in Santa Cruz. It began, well, who knows where it began. Its most famous incarnation was in Los Angeles, where they are, apparently they... the other police jurisdictions picked up the idea. So we're going to be following some of a discussion by John Crew of the American Civil Liberties Union about this police practice of using a gang profile and a gang list to sweep this huge net, which actually gets one out of every two black males between the ages of 21 and 24. You're likely to be on that list in certain areas. So quite something for us to be concerned about, those of us who do want to fight this current police state mentality that seems to be taking over, for instance, our Santa Cruz City Council, where so-called liberals like Scott Kennedy are pushing for police grants that will transform their Resource Center for Nonviolence. Liberals like Kennedy and Rotkin are pushing for laws that make it illegal for people to even be on the river levee after dark. If you want to be there now, that's a crime. Police state curfews, laws against homeless people, which we've talked about at great length on this show in the past. Sleeping outside anywhere, that's a law we're trying to overturn today. In fact, if you want to help overturn that law, the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, we have an initiative we are trying to get enough signatures for, and you can go down to the Hemp Expo. That's the expo that really very successful, wildly successful expo at the Civic Auditorium. It was held yesterday, started yesterday, went through last night, and now today it's resuming. See the incredible uses to which hemp can be put, and we're not even talking about marijuana for medicinal or recreational purposes. We're talking about hemp, the product, which for years, decades, centuries was a mainstay of many different purposes, and now, of course, it's illegal to grow in the United States. And hopefully that this convention isn't just a bunch of commercial greed heads who are interested in ripping the scene off for what they can. Hopefully these are folks who are interested in really changing the laws in the United States so that hemp can be grown, and also changing the laws so that medical marijuana can be used, and so that recreational marijuana, for God's sake, can be used as well. I've noted a kind of a reluctance by hemp folks to, at this exposition, I actually haven't spent much time there, but a reporter from Free Radio Santa Cruz, who I spoke to last night, said 9 out of the 10 folks not only weren't interested in decriminalizing marijuana for medicinal or recreational purposes or doing anything about that, but they actually didn't really care about even decriminalizing the growth of hemp as long as they could have their hemp sent in from overseas. And I hope this is only a biased sample that she caught, or maybe a misunderstanding, but I really encourage those of you who care about this issue to raise it with the folks at the Hemp Expo. And at the Hemp Expo, by the way, you can sign the petition, Decriminalize Sleep, to make it legal for homeless and poor people to sleep. It's at the far back, at the left of the stage. You'll find a table where the petition is sitting. Do sign it. You'll find folks circulating with their petition, trying to get you to sign. That's a petition that you have to be a registered city voter to sign. You have to live in the city and be registered to vote. And you can help put this thing on the ballot. We need to have probably about 6,500, maybe 7,000 signatures by, I think it's May 28th. We thought we'd have to have far less, but as you know, those of you who listen to the program regularly, the attempt to get the Pelton Street petition passed, which is the petition that would have allowed the city to, well, forced the city council to keep the Pelton Street property, which is the community gardens, until it was put up to a vote of the population. But I see my guests have finished their drug habits outside, and they've returned. I'm not going to call the police at this time, but perhaps we can continue with that. And again, I encourage you, go to, do you want more information about the petition to decriminalize sleep, to end the sleeping ban, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And leave a message, and I'll get back to you. Or you can call the committee to repeal the sleeping ban itself, and we'll have more numbers on that. But let's get back to our guests, who we will again ask to sign in.
Jorge Castro.
Jorge Castro. That's not Jorge Thomas, folks. That's Jorge Castro. Let's get that straight. And B.E. Smith. What does B.E. stand for?
B.E. stands for truth, liberty, honesty, justice. I was born B.E. Smith in Alabama. That's my real name. And it's funny because right now in federal court, they have an indictment on me, and it's under an alias that I used in grammar school because they wouldn't let me go to school with so-called initials, B.E. So we had to trace a family tree back to a doctor that delivered me, and because he died when I was about 7 years old, and we didn't know what his real name was other than it was B.E. So we tracked his family tree down and found out it was Bayless. B-A-R-L-O-U-S. And so I had to use that name going through my my schooling and military career. And
you probably don't want to use it at this time.
I won't use it at this time. It's an alias, but the federal boys, the federal cops who I know and they're playing with my mind, they dug this information up and they brought the indictment under this alias. And so right now we're going to do a motion to make them call me by my real name, because if you're going to give a five-count indictment against you, they should give you respect and call you by your real name.
Let's talk about that briefly. We were talking about Jorge's stuff, and we're going to return to your stuff, Jorge. But before we do, tell us what's happening with you, B.E., and summarize and bring us up to date.
Okay, last year I came out of the closet as a pot grower up in northern Trinity County, northwest Trinity County, a little place called Denny, D-E-N-N-Y. And that's where the war on drugs started, by the way, in 1983. That's when Camp came up and started the war right there. And I was there. I was there the first day, and I'm going to be there the last day. So after 17 years of growing, Proposition 215 was passed. And so I went to the supervisors in Trinity County and said, hey, boys, I'm coming out of the closet. I'm going to grow marijuana, and I'm going to grow it for the sick people. And I'm going to grow it in Denny, California, on this 38-acre ranch. And here's a map how to get there. Well, at the same day that I talked to the supervisors in Trinity County, Associated Press was there. And they did the story on it, and it went nationwide. And then from there, it went worldwide. So everyone in the whole world knew that I was going to grow medical marijuana in Denny, California. And so I did. June the 3rd, 1997, I started 20 plants. NBC was there, Feminine. And on the same day, the person that owned the ranch took a statement into the Trinity County Sheriff's Office and told them that he witnessed me planting 20 medical marijuana plants on this acre of land that he leased to me for 99 years. And so NBC was there, and they filmed it, and the sheriff, they made no comment. And so during the next couple of months, I worked with the sheriff department in Trinity County and talked to him probably twice a month, three times a month. I would talk to him and tell him how my plants was doing and so forth. And then it got to a point that I started getting buds. And so I went to the sheriff's office. And I know all the guys there because I've been a candidate for sheriff. And I'm also another candidate this year. And we'll talk about that later, because tomorrow I have to file a writ of mandamus in the Supreme Court of California to get a law overturned.
But that's the same law that makes it illegal for four other or three other candidates to run for sheriff because they don't have the so-called educational background required, the professional background.
Right, and one of the people is a patriot down here in Santa Cruz, Richard Quigley, and if we get the law overturned, I'm sure Richard would be a good sheriff, because Richard understands the common law, and he understands that you have to hurt someone before he would send his deputies to come and get you. And that's the same as I am in Trinity County. We will be a common law county in Trinity County. I won't let Forest Service cops pack guns in my county. If the FBI or the IRS or the U.S. Marshals come in Trinity County, they'll come by and talk to me first and get my permission, because the sheriff is the strongest, most baddest guy in the county. He's the toughest dude. And so these federal boys, they're going to have to stay out of Trinity County if I'm elected sheriff. It's just that plain and simple. And my army is just as big as their army, because I got every man in Trinity County over the age 18 years of old age that I can deputize. And the people in Trinity County, believe it or not, they want to live in the common law. We're a bunch of mountain men up there, and we want to live in the common law, and it works great. We got a beautiful system in this country, but we have to wake the people up and tell them how the government is functioning, and they're not functioning very right. According to the Constitution, they're so far off base that they should be on the moon right now working.
So are you going to run as a write-in candidate in the event that your writ is denied? What's your plan?
No, you can't run as a write-in, because they won't count the ballots. If you can't be put on the ballot, they can't count them. And so I have to get the law overturned, and I think we will this time. Last time I couldn't get it overturned because, number one, I did it myself, and I didn't have the experience, the knowledge in law. And since 4 years, we've been working on it 4 years now, and we got to have a motion that I'm going to file tomorrow morning in San Francisco. And then they have about 10 and 12 days to answer it. And I'm sure we're going to get it overturned, because there's so much case law that we're using that they would be fools not to overturn it. we're going to use a property qualification as one argument, and then we're going to use the argument of the right to vote, and then we're going to use the 14th Amendment argument. And so I think we're going to overturn it. Plus Richard, he's already filed his.
Richard Quigley.
Right, Richard Quigley down here in Santa Cruz. He filed his last Tuesday, so his should be heard before mine. But Richard and myself and a person from Palo Alto, and then there's a person from Santa Rosa, we've been sharing information with each other on the internet.
This is a law that claims you cannot be sheriff unless you have so many years of either experience with the sheriff's department or some kind of academic course on that.
Well, the very basic would be a high school diploma with 5 years experience as a peace officer. Then it works its way up, and it goes all the way up to a master's degree. If you have a master's degree, you need at least 1 year law enforcement service before you can run for sheriff. In fact, Dan Lundgren, Attorney General of the State of California, who's the boss of the district attorneys and the sheriffs in the state of California, he can't run for sheriff in the state of California. He doesn't have the peace officer experience.
Wow, that's amazing. You also have another case in the court, so you were talking about the...
Yeah, we can get back to that. May 22nd, we have a day to hear the motions that we're going to file. And my attorney, Tom Blanco, is working up one hell of a motion to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction. And it deals with the federal government. The federal government has no jurisdiction to come in on state land and arrest someone and go in and prosecute them in federal court. There's too many cases in the Supreme Court that says they can't do this, but until someone gets up and rebut that, they can do anything they want to.
What are you charged with?
Cultivation of marijuana, maintaining a place, conspiracy, possession of marijuana, and what's the other one?
Felonies.
Right, they're felonies.
Facing many years in jail if you are convicted.
I don't even think about it. I haven't thought about it one time. Besides, my lawyer says, B.E., I promise you, you'll never spend a day in jail. And I believe him. No, but we do have a good case, and they didn't... I don't think the federal government wanted my case. They had to take it because... I beat the county and I beat the state, and they knew that if I harvested all the TV people in the world and all the newspaper people in the country would be there on my harvest party, because I was going to set it up, because I wanted to be the first one that beat these guys in Proposition 215, and they knew that, and so they just sent the marshals up and took my pot.
What do people do who are in need of medical marijuana in Trinity County? And by the way, where is Trinity County?
Trinity County is, for instance, Redding, California, and Eureka, California. We're sitting right in between in the mountains. It's a big area. They say if you take a steamroller and flatten it out, it'd be the size of Texas. Nothing but mountains. And we don't have a red light in the whole county. And the only red lights you see in Trinity County are the ones on the cop cars.
And so you had your medical marijuana seized. Does that mean nobody in Trinity County has access to medical marijuana? What's the situation there in terms of legal access? Are they refusing to allow that and to abide by the 215, the law as voted by the citizens of our state?
Well, there are so many growers in Trinity County. I don't think the sick people has any problem getting it in Trinity County because we share with our neighbors. They took all my pot in September, but I've been stoned every day since September, so they didn't put no hurt on me. And they owe me 191 pounds of pot, too, and they're going to pay it. They're going to pay $5,000 a pound for it. Now, I wasn't going to charge that much for my customers. I was going to charge $500 a pound. But because the federal government didn't have a contract with me, it's going to be $5,000 a pound.
You say you beat the county and the state. Do you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, I went to the sheriff's office about first part of September, and I seen a friend of mine, Sergeant Dave Cox. He's a head of narcotics in Trinity County. Nice guy. And I said, "Hey, Dave," I said, "my buds are coming on. And if you're going to come and get me now, because I'm going to put security on the patch." And he says, "B, we're not going to come and get you. You're going to be famous." And I said, "Dave, F that famous. I don't want to be famous. I want you to tell me whether or not you're going to come and get me, because I don't want to be a member. I know about security." So I was going to put security on that patch because I wanted to harvest it for my sick patients. And he said again, "B.E., we're not going to come and get it." And so I figured, hey, I beat them. I beat these guys. And
they didn't come and get it.
Right, they didn't come and get it. Dave didn't lie to me. Dave's never lied to me. And so I believed Dave, but the U.S. Marshals came.
About the state, you say you beat the state as well?
Well, when you beat the county, you beat the state, yeah.
Enforce the state law.
Right, right. And
people support you in this particular case?
Well, we're trying to get a support group going. We have a non-profit going also, and we're trying to raise money for attorneys that are willing to fight for the people that got arrested for Proposition 215. I think that my case is one of the best we have, because I started with 87 plants. Well, I had 88 plants, and then one of them went male. And, I couldn't believe it.
Gender renegade plant.
Oh, I had morphidite seeds from a year before, and this is the first time that I got 99% female ratio. And
can anyone ever trust you again, is it best?
Can anyone ever trust me? On what?
It's on this gender issue.
The female?
I'm going to leave this joke on the ground where it belongs. Go ahead.
I don't know that joke. I just smoke Sensimilla. That's no seeds. And where was we at?
We were at the point where, you know, actually what I wanted to talk to you about more, I was asking what people could do to assist you and to support your case. And, of course, on Tuesday, you know, as you probably know, the Cannabis Club of Santa Cruz, as well as I guess six other cannabis clubs in the state, are going to be in federal court in San Francisco defending their right to distribute marijuana to their patients. And so that's going to be happening on Tuesday. We actually have a small interview with Kate Wells, local attorney, around that issue, as a friend of yours, as I understand it. Yes.
Great lady.
Yeah, she's a great lady. I talked to her years ago, and then I was able to see her yesterday down here at the Hemp Festival. I met a lot of my friends from Santa Cruz down here yesterday, and this morning already. I've been over there earlier, and that's where we came to have the station here. And I'll be back this afternoon. I'll be there Tuesday with you guys up there in San Francisco. We're going to file the writ tomorrow, and then we'll spend the night in San Francisco.
What time is that going to be on Tuesday in federal court in San Francisco?
I hope I brought my, I did. I brought a flyer. And it's going to be Tuesday, March the 24th at 11 a.m. And it's going to be a march from Harvey Milk Memorial Rainbow Flagpole, that's on Castro and Market, to a federal courthouse. And then there's going to be a noon rally at the federal courthouse, and that's at 450 Golden Gate, and that's at Polk Street.
So for those who want to support you, support Santa Cruz medical marijuana users, and also just support the law, for heaven's sake, here in the state, come by at noon in San Francisco. And I don't know if there's a caravan going up from Santa Cruz, but if you can get up to San Francisco, you can certainly support that. We began this conversation by talking about Jorge Castro, your case, which is coming up tomorrow as well, Monday, and everything hits real fast in Santa Cruz. And you guys have had a chance to do some talking kind of over the musical break. Would you like Jorge to have B.E. talk about it? Would you like to talk about it further? How should we proceed on this issue? Or is the case a good case to discuss basic constitutional issues?
No, not the constitutional issues, not right now, because that stage of the proceedings already passed. But I think he has a good facts case, and I don't know what his attorney wants him to do, but I would definitely have him get on the witness stand and tell the story that he told you today and told me when I came in. He's also told me the story here last month when I came down, And I don't think a jury will convict him, because each one of those jury, I'm sure, is going to be in his position once in his life, that he was trying to help a friend out, and the friend was the one that caused all the problems.
Now, you're actually going to, your jury begins to be selected tomorrow?
Tomorrow morning at 10, we start selecting the selection of the jurors. I'm just hoping that we don't get any jurors that are against anti-homeless. I just want them to be good, honest citizens, but not anti-homeless, because that's what I am, and have been for, 18 years.
You told me when we spoke about 3 or 4 days ago, you were going to bring into court some documentation and letters of support. You say that you feel like if your testimony is being presented on the one hand, and then they have the police officer with his, how many citations have you had with your shiny blue uniform and so forth, it seems to be, in a sense, an unequal contest. You're going to be bringing in some declarations of support and qualification for yourself.
Right. I'm also a decorated Vietnam veteran and everything, and what I didn't want to see happen in court was that the police officer's introduced as a say, 12, 17-year veteran, and he's been officer of the year, and they get to ramble on about all of his greatness. I just want to make sure I can say who I am for the equal amount of period that he's talking about, because I've done a lot of great community service to this community. And as far as the war on crime, I believe, because I work as an exterminator of camps around the soup kitchen and areas of crack camps and stuff, that my contribution on the war on crime is a lot greater than his.
Now, what are you being charged with, Jorge, exactly?
It's intent to purchase an imaginary drug.
This is one, soliciting. This is one count? Or more than one count?
Just being with my friend for helping him.
It's a felony, though, and it's one charge.
No, it's a misdemeanor.
It's a misdemeanor.
It's just a misdemeanor.
Right. But see, he wasn't arrested at the time his friend was arrested, so that's in his favor too. Because if he was committing a crime, it was the duty of the peace officer to arrest him immediately, and so they had to take it back to the office and think about it to see what they're going to do to this guy. So that's going to be something that his lawyer will have to bring out when the peace officer is on the witness stand.
Who is your lawyer?
Oh, that's what I was saying right before we went out to have our death cigarette. I didn't have a lawyer. I felt completely at a loss.